Record button. So we are now recording, and you as a group have read the Josh Schoenen case, and I'd like to introduce Josh, and then Josh is going to take it over from here. Josh describes himself as a turnaround expert in manufacturing, ranging in company size 12 to 200 million. He also describes himself as a decent little league coach. I don't know which is more difficult. His area of expertise is manufacturing with a particular emphasis on medical devices and aerospace. He is a partner with the Business Improvement Group, and he's got more than 30 years experience. He's also an investor with the River Valley Investors. It's the premier angel investment group in Western Massachusetts. Josh has an MBA from Harvard Business School. He received his BA in economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. So Josh, take it away.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you for having me. And it's nice to meet everyone. I have to tell you that the other day, one of the things I do is some pro bono consulting to nonprofits. And I was on a Zoom call the other day, and the nonprofit I was consulting to decided to bring along a couple of their very junior people just to observe. And one of them happened to be a kid that I coached in Little League, which was pretty scary. Okay, I hope you enjoyed the case. I guess the idea now is for the groups, whoever would like, to sort of anoint a spokesman and spokesperson and basically give, you know, a short list of bullet point recommendations. What do you do if you're Jane McCoy? What do you recommend to the board?
So our groups, our lead off from our group is Vivian.
Well, thanks, Ellen. Ellen did a nice job of leading us in the group. But first of all, we decided that the bank has the power.
So can I just stop you just for a second? Somebody's got something going on in the background. And if you would just mute yourself so that others are not disturbed by it. Okay.
Okay. The first thing we all agreed on was that the bank had the power. And then we identified some of the issues with the company. And first of all, there was a governance issue, number one. There's a financial issue and a cultural issue. So the thought was that we would bring the two families together jointly and then have them all agree, number one, do we want the company to succeed? That was our first question. And if we do want the company to succeed, can we all agree that we do not have the governance and the leadership that we need to really move the company forward? So having reached a decision on both of those, and if the answer is yes, then after that, we've decided that we are going to hire Craig Sanders, and he has agreed to come and be the turnaround person for us. And we believe that he will be able to do the work that's needed. So we're going to fire Eric and have Craig come in as the turnaround person. And as the CEO, we're going to bring the bank in, and we're going to bring Craig in and bring all of the family members in together and really have them tell the family how serious the issue is. And just really, really be hard on them and let them know that either you're going to allow Craig to do the things that need to be done, that he has all of the power to move this company forward, or within 30 days, 60 days, we will be calling in the loan. And then again, secondly, we're going to get rid of Eric because obviously he has not done and cannot do what he needs to do to be a leader of the company. So he's gone. And then it's basically going to be one person from each family, and Craig will be the three leaders that are leading the company, with the understanding that either we're going to do the work that needs to be done and everybody has to get involved, or the bank has provided the understanding, or we will be calling in the loan within, if we don't see success within 30 days or at least a path to success, then we will be calling in the loan. Did I miss anything, my team? Okay.
I'm seeing thumbs up, so good job, Vivian. All right, let's hear from a spokesman for another team.
So I'll jump in. We pretty much saw it very, very similarly. I think as we organized our thoughts, we focused on the case and the four questions. You know, how do we handle the bank? What org structure or changes might be needed? How would we ensure the ops improvements are actually implemented? Because I think a plan was brought forward that could bring them to profitability again, but it just hadn't been implemented. And then the board governance, what changes might need to occur? And so we went down each of that list and just checked it off. We are full agreement. We believe the bank is fully in charge here. And I think that's an opportunity because up to this point, the personal family dynamics have caused us not to make the changes that have been needed to be made for quite some time. So we see it as an opportunity rather than a detriment. And so we must adhere to what the bank is asking us to do. And we should use that as a catalyst for change. We were in agreement that we did need to bring in an external CEO. We felt that also played into the corporate governance, meaning we needed a decision maker deciding vote because right now it's 4-4. And so everything always fell on family lines and that needs to change. So from a org structure, we did talk about, you know, should we sever Eric? We are all aligned that we probably should. It was a timing issue though. So how do you let go one family member on one side of the fence and not the other, et cetera? And there might be emotions and dynamics there. And we felt that at least initially complying with the bank's requirements, bringing in an external leader CEO that could implement the plan that's already been laid out. And now Eric may be a detriment to that, but he may not be depending upon this CEO and this leader. So putting it on that CEO to make the determination, what team does he need or what structure? We also spoke about the corporate governance though. We were of the feeling that yes, it's a family owned business. It's 4-4 on each side, but the actual board needs to evolve too. We need some external perspectives beyond just a CEO that's going to now join the board. So that was something that we felt also needed to occur, but it was the timing of such. We were of the opinion you got to live to fight another day. We totally agreed, you know, people's livelihoods are at stake and maybe many of these family members don't even realize it. So to the point earlier, getting them in a room and agreeing, you know, do we want the company to succeed or don't we? Yes or no? Because longer term, us turning this around and selling it at a higher multiple than what the value is today is probably in the family's best interest as well. And those are the things that need to be clearly articulated in order for them to get on board and align. So that was kind of a synopsis of how we summarized the four questions and kind of the answers.
Very good.
Team, anything I missed or you'd like to interject? Marianne, Jim, Frederick
has something to say.
Good. All right. Who would like to be next? John.
We had pretty similar conclusions, and I think, Josh, it was a very well-written case to lay out the issues, and I kind of felt like been there, done that with a couple of companies that I work with. Kind of walking through the questions like everybody else, we thought that the bank really had complete control, and the perspective of the family should be, how can we do what the bank wants in such a way as to buy time? Because the change they need are not going to happen in 30 days. And the bank initially kind of gave them some time. They want to see that progress happen on. We thought that they clearly needed a CEO and they needed Eric moved out of the way. And whether that was put him aside in a different role or terminate him or do step one and then step two, but he was a root cause of the problem with his style and a lack of follow through, not being held accountable or holding any of his people accountable. And we thought we would start with John Kane, the consultant, and see if we could hire him as an interim CEO to really implement the plan that he defined for them and go after what was really low hanging fruit. And if there's that much stuff low hanging, then there's a lot more of tougher things that could come as a follow-on phase to that. And if he was doing that, that would really take care of the need for the implementation. And my guess is there's a lot of frustration in the staff of this company because of the chaos, and they might be very open to it and might really rise to the occasion. And if needed, we could bring in some new skills that they didn't have there. Change the board structure. Our recommendation got fairly specific. We suggested that they all resign from the board and they elect back two family members. We figured that would probably be one from each side. Maybe not, but anyway, two family members to represent both families, the CEO being on the board, and then two outsiders with either operational experience, industry experience, or banking background. And we thought that way they could get the board out of the way, and it was probably going to take a real clear understanding with the family of how much was at risk for them. If all this doesn't happen, then the bank's going to take it over and sell it cheap.
I'd like to point out that John has done exactly that from a corporate governance point of view at a messy family business. And I think he's done a remarkable job.
Two now, Larry.
Two. Okay.
Very good. All right. Let's see. We had five groups, right? So we have two more people to hear from. Kevin?
Yeah, Craig told me I had to do it, not to worry. He'd shoot me in the back when I get off track. So I'll tell you. We had many of the same thoughts. Certainly the board's been let this thing get into a mess. There have to be some changes there. And one-to-one family gridlock can't remain. So we too thought there had to be some change there and some outsiders involved that could prevent that gridlock. The bank may take a seat as a condition of hanging in. And it also seemed that Jane's in a real power position here. There's description through the case that she's been pretty objective and argued with her own family members and had some pretty good insight along the way. One of our groups suggested maybe she ought to be CEO. I kind of thought she might be too smart to take that job. But, you know, she could go to the bank. She could go to the chairman. She could go to her brother, Eric, wielding probably a big swing vote and make clear to a lot of people something here had to change. So between her and the bank, there's a real power position there. Our sense was, too, that Eric was ineffective in the role. Something had to change. Jerry told a very interesting anecdote that might apply here. And when you read the case, Eric seems to have been thrust into this role relatively recently as his father died. And maybe it's just not the fit for him. And as was mentioned already, I think by Brian, just firing a family member might not work well. And maybe he's just not in the right role and something else has to be found for him for a period of time. Does he grow back into it later? Who knows? But he doesn't seem the guy that has the skill or temperament to lead them out of the hole they're in now. And if the consultant can be made to be the CEO for a time, fantastic, but has to be some kind of a change there. So I think we were on the side to make the board governance changes, get it out of the Locke family thing, try and get Eric out of that role in as graceful a way possible, but pretty quickly. Jane and the bank having the power. And another observation, you know, we're not told a lot about the business here, but there needs to be some kind of a strategic plan that wasn't mentioned. They talk about declining margins, stagnant market, all these kind of things. So what we don't know is the broader business backdrop that all this is being considered against. So there really does have to be a plan that reaches out into the future and how can this business remain viable or can it? And that ought to be a business-based one, but also really have a succession plan element as they seem to have stumbled into people in roles that maybe aren't going to be what serves any of the family well for the long haul. So I think those were our main points. And now Craig and the rest can shoot me in the back.
Craig, do you have your gun out? I don't see a gun. Okay. Who is, there's a fifth group. Who is the spokesperson for the fifth group?
That's your group. I can jump in if you'd like, if that's okay.
That's right. It's our group. And I was told to remain quiet by Larry.
I can confirm for the broader group that you did not divulge any secrets or give us any competitive advantage in the discussion. So thank you for being honorable. Look, everybody's covered, I think, largely many of the same themes that I think we explored as a group together. I think what we really became clear on was the need for this to be the right executive hire. There was some initial discussion about whether or not you needed a full-on CEO, where the bank might have a concern about that type of an expenditure, given how quickly action was needed. So making sure that we got the right lady or gent in the role, whether it was a COO or somebody that had that deep operational background, I think was one of the things that we discussed. I think the stuff that we covered that really hasn't been touched on yet was starting to be more creative with maybe what some of those plans that John might have brought to the table might have been. That maybe there was some utility available, that maybe if we could get things done, we didn't need three shifts, that maybe we could condense with that operational improvement and save cost and be more efficient without having to run at 24/7. And if we wanted to do that, maybe there might have been some opportunity for us to do contract manufacturing to help dig things out a little bit further than what we might have done. So I think we kicked around pretty much everything that has been discussed already at this particular point, Josh. So I'm not sure if I'm missing anything from my team that they might want to interject. But clearly, we also felt that, you know, she really was the person that needed to speak, you know, truth to power. She was the one who needed to, you know, have truth over harmony, as it were, and that Jane really was one of the most important pieces of the puzzle to be able to give this a chance. So, and I think everything else has been covered. I was checking it off as we went along.
Very good. At this point, Larry, should I maybe let the cat out of the bag? You're on mute, Larry. Larry's saying yes. I guess it's time to let the cat out of the bag. Okay, so before I get right to the chase, let me give you a little context. This is a very board-centric discussion for obvious reasons. This is a board group. I was brought in as an operator. I am an operator. I run companies. I run P&L statements. I don't think of myself as a board member, although I've had plenty of exposure to boards. I've made presentations to boards. I've sat in on board meetings and so forth. But the perspective that I was bringing in was very much one of an operator. I mentioned in the case that it was fairly easy to identify some of the process problems. And incidentally, none of them involved either layoffs or capital expenditures. I try to avoid both of those if I can. But there were just huge leakages in the way they ran the business on the floor of the plant. And I can describe those in more detail. But the point I'm making at this point is that was the easy part. The hard part was managing all the competing agendas. You had a commercial bank with its interests. You had an investment bank with its interests. You had two families on the board with each of their interests. You had the personalities of David and Eric with their interests. And at times I felt almost like more of a guidance counselor than an operator. And that's really the crux of the story, was managing those agendas. And finally, a couple things brought it to the head. One was the notice from the bank that, you know, you've got to fix this thing. And the second one was that I got frustrated at one point, and I pulled one person from the investment bank, one person from the commercial bank, the two guys from the board, Jerry and Jane, and David and Eric together. And I said, look, you've asked me to come in and help this company. All I'm doing right now is playing babysitter. Do you want me to fix this thing or not? And if you do, let me do it. And that sort of broke the ice. So now I'll cut to the chase. This happened during 2019, in middle of the year, 2019. Around the 1st of October, I had a long telephone conversation with Jerry and with Jane. And all of us had come to more or less the same conclusion that that you have identified, which is Eric is a real problem. There were a couple of interesting dynamics in play there. One, it was that David had shown some promise, I thought. The other, and I struggled as to whether to put this in the case or not, and I decided finally not to, but it became kind of important. It was that it was apparent that Eric didn't like his job. He knew he was in over his head. There was a lot of pressure on him. And there were large parts of the business, all the legal, financial, information systems, marketing, that were just completely beyond him. He's a very nuts and bolts guy. And he hated that stuff. And you could see when we got into conversations about that stuff, his eyes would just glaze over. And I kind of raised the question with Jerry and Jane, you know, if we found someplace else for Eric, would he really be all that unhappy about it? And I said, my guess is he wouldn't.
Right.
As long as he can still make some decent money, which became a problem. What wound up happening was that David Hatfield, who had been the head of sales, became the president. And Eric was shunted off to high sales, kind of high customer, high volume sales. The board decided on a salary issue, because it's kind of hard to have a president making $70,000 a year less than his vice president. On the other hand, they didn't have a lot of excess money lying around. So what they decided to do was take $35,000 away from Eric and give it to David plus $1,000 so that he could say he was the highest paid person. And Eric wasn't too happy about that, but he wasn't exactly in the poorhouse either. And so he lived with it. The question of the board itself and the governance obviously came up, and all of you have made the observation correctly that the root cause of the problem really was the board. The board was useless. It wasn't providing good governance. There were no subcommittees at all, incidentally. There was no such thing as a governance subcommittee or an audit subcommittee or anything like that. It was just eight people getting together, and hopefully they could come to an agreement, and then they'd go out and have a nice steak dinner. You know, and count their dividends. Hopefully there were dividends, but it had gotten to the point where obviously that wasn't going to work anymore. The problem was that changing a board takes time. And especially a board makeover, just recruiting the right people can take months and months and months. And we didn't have that kind of time. So we sort of backburnered that issue for the time being. The other part of the deal was, although David was made the president, they wanted me to run the show for about 6 months. Because by that point I had identified these buckets of savings and I had come to them with real plans, real project plans, which is something they had never seen before. And they wanted me to essentially run the show and then move out of the way and David would be the president. And I said, okay, but. And the but was that I knew I wouldn't be there forever, but David would. And if it looked to the rest of the organization like I was the one calling the shots, I would have emasculated David. And he would have had to prove himself all over again the moment I walked out the door. And that's not a good thing for David, and it's not a good thing for the company. So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll be in charge, but we won't tell anyone. We'll do it all behind the scenes. I was visible in the plant. I was on the plant floor every day. But when announcements were made and when projects were organized, David was the one doing the talking. And then he and I would go behind closed doors and I'd say, okay, this is what's next. Or we'd go out to lunch or something. So it was a very quiet type of relationship. And I think, I hope that it helped David grow into his role. He was relatively young. He was kind of inexperienced. I wanted to make him as strong as possible so that when I left, he would be able to carry on. There were a number of other changes that we made. Several people mentioned the 24/7 schedule and whether that can be compressed. My answer to that was no, and David agreed for a couple of reasons. One is it would have involved layoffs. And no one wanted that. One of my experiences with mature family-owned companies is they tend to be very, very loyal to their employees, especially the long-term employees. And whenever there's any discussion of a sale of a company, their first concern is often for their employees, often ahead of how much money can I get out of this? Because the employees have been there for so long and worked so hard and they're part of the family and they want to see them treated right. So on that count, we didn't want layoffs. The other reason was there was no need for it because they were turning away work simply because they weren't productive enough. So we knew that if we could raise productivity, we could bring in plenty of work to fill the machine hours 24/7 for as many machines as we had, even in a market that was growing only 1 or 2% a year. There was enough work out there. They had enough decent technology in their machines that they were getting calls all the time in sort of a spot market and turning away work. So we knew that if we improved productivity, we would fill the machine hours. So then the question simply became, now we need to execute. We've got these four big projects, let's execute. And the way it worked is I would meet with David behind closed doors. We developed a standard project plan. We wanted everybody to use the same kind of project plan so that the look and feel would be the same. So that if someone from a different department was looking at a project plan, they would be able to easily understand it. It was in a common nomenclature, common syntax, common order. David did all the talking and we went to work. And I'll give you one example of what we did because it's just so damn simple. One of my favorite things to do on the floor of a plant is just to follow people around like a puppy and see what they do. And one of my early days there, there was a machine that had just finished a job and was beginning to set up for a new one. And I decided to follow the lead operator. He spent an hour and 22 minutes running around the plant, gathering the tooling he needed for the next job. The Jim Cracks were stored over here and the Whatsabobbits were stored over there and they were all in bins and they weren't marked and it took forever to gather all the tooling. An hour and 22 minutes. Meantime, the machine is helpfully sitting there doing absolutely nothing. I said, is this the way you do setups? And he said, yeah. And so I followed a couple other operators around and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So the first project was to gather all the tooling from all the dusty corners of the plant, and we literally dumped it out on the floor. And that's an exercise I like to do, because the first thing people will see is, holy crap, we got a lot of stuff here that we didn't even know we had. And the second thing they'll find out is half of it is broken and obsolete and we don't need it. So we went through all the tooling, we got rid of the junk, we marked the rest, we put a barcode on every one of them. We stored them all in one room. We put one guy in charge of it. And the grand capital expenditure that we made was 20 carts from Granger that cost $80 a piece. And as the schedule rolled out, this guy would assemble the tooling that was needed for the next job, put it on a cart, and bring it to the machine. And now we're saving an hour and 20 minutes on every setup. That's about as simple as it gets. And the other three projects weren't a heck of a lot more complicated than that. So the end of the story is a good one. In December, they made a little bit of money. In December of 2019, they made a little bit of money for the first time. They continued to become more profitable last year. In January, I sat down with the president and we put a business planning process together. We said, here are the projects we're going to complete in 2020. And each of them had a hyperlink to one of those standard project plans. And each of those project plans had someone in charge, who's going to do what, deadlines, dates, the whole shamil. And they promised they would have a meeting every 2 weeks and they would go through the plans. And it was pretty interesting. I attended the first 8 or 10 of those meetings, which David ran. And when he hyperlinked to one of those projects and someone wasn't up to date, falling behind with, then there were questions. And he didn't really have to ask the questions because it was in a big screen in front of everybody, right? That's accountability. So we put a process in place. It wasn't just a matter of fix this, fix that. It was also put a process in place for continuous improvement. And in May of last year, I essentially left. I still have sort of a retainer relationship with David, and they were beginning to work on board turnover. And the very end of the story happened just a month ago. They got an offer from a competitor to buy the company. It was a very generous offer. It was far more than I would have offered. They were smart enough to take it, and the company was sold a month ago.
Congratulations. That's a big project. Congratulations.
It was fun.
Any questions of Josh before we stop the program? Thank you very much for this case, Josh. That was great. And I liked how specific you were. That was good. Next month, we are going to have a special seat at the table program. I just wanted to let you know in advance, it's going to be on the 25th of March. That's the last Thursday of the month. Ellen Richstone is going to be presenting the case. So those of you who know Ellen know it's going to be a good case. But we will not be meeting at 5 o'clock like we usually do. We usually meet from 5 to 6:30, but Ellen's got a conflict. So we'll be meeting from 5:30 to 7 instead. So put in your calendars, March 25th, Thursday, 5:30 to 7. We'll be sending out an announcement about that in a couple of days. Josh, again, thank you very much for presenting the case.
Thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed meeting all of you.
Take care, everybody. Enjoy dinner.
Thank you, Larry.
Bye-bye. Thanks, y'all. Take care, everyone. Good night.
Bye.